Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who met his wife while training for the 400 meters in Seattle and is eating gluten-free while lusting after bread, Dave Denniston.
My name is Dave Denniston. Welcome back, my friends, to the latest episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Well, let me ask you a question. Have you been itching just to jumpstart your financial future, right? Maybe you're sitting there, you're wondering whether or not you can stick it out in clinical medicine. Well, I've been doing some financial experiments to help you, and of course, selfishly me, to get a better handle on all of the different ways we can generate passive and not so passive income streams. And as a matter of fact, about 4 months ago, I revealed I bought a brand new business. So I detailed all of this in the season 3, episode 12, Learning from My Mistakes podcast. So make sure to check that out in the show notes. I'm going to drop some links in there. But anyhow, I'm learning about all this stuff. And I thought it'd be really cool to bring on the show the folks that helped make my acquisition get through and to explain the process and maybe even coach me through some of the issues that we've been having. So I have a ton of questions, and I think you are just going to find this educational, give you that business education you never got, and we can all learn together. With no further ado, please help me welcome Justin Cook from Empire Flippers. Welcome, Justin.
Awesome, Dave. Thanks for having me on, man. Really appreciate it.
Hey, I'm so glad to have you on, buddy, and I'm sure there's a lot of us that aren't familiar with you. Just give us a quick thumbnail sketch of your background, my friend.
Yeah, so I was a mid-level manager for a company in the U.S., and I had a previous business, a mortgage company, that had failed, so I was pretty gun-shy about entrepreneurship. My previous business partner and I were both managers for this company, and we found a need to outsource to the Philippines. We were hiring a ton of people. We needed some labor, and so we said, look, let's start hiring some people in the Philippines. We were in California at the time. Ended up hiring a team in the Philippines and started growing that team. And over time, we said, look, we're kind of setting up a company here. Why don't we just go all at it? So we talked to our CEO, CFO, said, look, you know, we're hiring and growing this team in the Philippines. Why don't we just make it our team? We'll set up a company over there, and you can outsource your business or a portion of your business to us. And they went for it. We ended up moving to the Philippines, a couple of different changes to our business, and we started building online businesses and kind of just like fumbling into the online business world, started creating websites and monetizing those websites, and eventually started to sell those websites. And in the course of kind of selling our own websites, we had a lot of people ask us, hey, I see you've got people that buy websites. Can we sell with you? So we kind of got into, you know, brokering by basically building our own websites, our own online businesses that made money, and then kind of built an audience of people that said, look, you're doing it. You've got buyers. Can we sell with you? And we said, sure, come on in and we'll help you sell your business as well. So that's kind of how we got into brokering online businesses and websites and the whole thing.
Wow. And you moved overseas. Was that hard? To make that move, or just an easy decision because it's like, oh, it's cheaper, it's awesome? What's that been like?
So we were, it's a little scary. I was in the Navy before, so I traveled overseas quite a bit on a ship. It's a little different. But, you know, that I traveled even after I got out. International travel was something I was interested in and like. So we were also, both of us were interested in, you know, making dollars and spending pesos, which is what they spend in the Philippines. And we said, look, if we can make U.S. dollars and live really well in the Philippines spending pesos, that would be amazing. And so we went over there. It was a little scary, setting up in a new place. You know, the Philippines is deceivingly similar to the U.S. in that English is prevalently spoken. You know, all like legal contracts are in English. But it's not exactly the same. And you start to really figure that out when you're living there in both good and bad ways. So it was a bit of a culture shock, more than maybe we expected. But, you know, a lot of good came out of it as well. And I've been in Asia now for, just over 7 years primarily. I mean, I go back to the U.S. for conferences and to visit family and everything. But, I generally live in Asia. I'm in Saigon, Vietnam right now, actually.
Well, it's a dream that so many people have, right? To work from your laptop wherever the heck you want. Is that something that you're loving? You know, is it hard?
It is. I mean, I have a lot of friends, and there's a community of people, there's multiple communities of people that kind of do this, and so it can get really lonely if you're just kind of doing it on your own, you don't know anyone. A few years ago, my now wife and I took off from the Philippines to travel, and so we did the, you know, 1 week here, you know, 2 weeks in Bangkok, and a week in Bali, and 2 weeks in Manila. And we started just doing the real, like, heavy travel thing. And, you know, we said, look, we just kind of go to these places. We don't know anyone. Let's kind of hook up with some communities and meet people. And we've kind of made friends. And there are a lot of people, more people than you might think, out here doing this type of thing. And we went to Europe last summer and met some of the people there in Barcelona. And so it's actually, you know, it's a bigger crowd than there were even, like, you know, 15, 20 years ago. There's a lot more people doing this now, which makes it better. I think if I was the only one and I was just kind of running into, like, banker expats that, you know, their company sent them to Hong Kong for a 2-year, you know, stint, right, that wouldn't be as fun. But the fact that there are a lot of entrepreneurs over here makes it interesting.
Huh, that's so cool. Well, I have more questions about the Philippines, about to talk about El Presidente over there before too long, but there's a ton of online businesses out there, Justin, and as I scroll through the Empire Flippers site, I encourage everyone to check it out, empireflippers.com. There's just a ton of different businesses, Amazon FBA, consulting, affiliates, and I'm guessing that there's someone listening out there right now that has no idea what the heck I just said. So give us a quick lay of the land. What are these different businesses that people could think about buying?
Yeah, a lot of times people, if they're just kind of brand new to this stuff, they say a website, like, you don't have to pay $400,000 for a website. That's crazy. Just have someone, you know, design a website for you and you're good to go. You got your website. Well, you know, the thing is, we're selling businesses and really more like cash flows, right? I mean, these are cash flowing businesses that you're buying. It's not just the website. And there's a lot that goes into it. But one of the most basic, I guess, business models online, and we actually have a post, and I'll share with you the 11 different online business models that goes into some depth that your listeners might be interested in. One of the basic models, though, would be like an AdSense site. And what this is it's a blog or a site that's around a particular niche. Let's just say ceiling fans. It's a blog about ceiling fans. And, you know, talks quite a bit about them, has, like, buying keywords in the content, but has nice images. And what you do is you place these kind of ad blocks on the page. And what that will do is it'll show advertising to, you know, visitors, people that come to visit the page, visit the site. Anytime someone clicks on those ads, you'll get a little bit of money. It might be 15 cents, it might be $1.50. It just depends on what types of ads are being shown and, you know, what the advertisers are paying you at the time. So you get a little bit, and you can make anywhere from, you know, a couple of bucks a month up to tens of thousands of dollars, even hundreds of thousands of dollars via the AdSense program. So that's kind of one of the most basic. You just kind of put there's a little bit of code on there on content that you have on this website or this blog, and then, you know, Google AdSense does the rest. They put up the ads, they match the advertisers with the content, that kind of thing. Probably the second easiest would be something like an Amazon affiliate site. And this is using the Amazon Associates program, where if you send traffic over to Amazon, you know, traffic that people are going to Amazon and buying stuff anyway, but if you actually send that person over to Amazon and they make a purchase, they'll give you a very small percentage of that purchase. So using the same example, if I have a site that's about ceiling fans and I'm kind of reviewing those ceiling fans and talking about the benefits or the downsides of one brand over another, and you click on one of the images or one of the links on my site and go to Amazon and buy one of those ceiling fans, or quite honestly anything at Amazon with a 24-hour cookie, I'll get a percentage of that sale. And so the more traffic I get to my site, the more interested potential, you know, buyers on Amazon I get to my site that click through and then buy stuff from Amazon, the more I get paid. So instead of like advertising where it's just the click gets me paid, they actually have to click through and purchase something with Amazon. And from there, it gets a bit more complicated. You can have, you know, traditional e-commerce businesses where you source products out of, you know, from manufacturers in China and you have it shipped over to your warehouse in the US. You know, it gets a little more complicated, but those are kind of the basic business models.
And then there's the Amazon FBA too. So what's that all about?
Yeah, so that's kind of a hybrid of an e-commerce business, a little easier. But basically, you'll take a product from your supplier, and quite often the suppliers are in China, but they don't have to be. They can be in the US, your manufacturers. And instead of shipping to your warehouse, or depending on how small your business is, your garage in some instances, you're not going to have them shipped to you. You're going to have them shipped to Amazon. So what they do is they ship your product to Amazon, and you have your product listed for sale on Amazon's platform. So Amazon will receive your goods and then ship those goods out to customers on your behalf. So the benefit of that is you don't have to drive traffic to your website. Amazon already has the traffic. They've got people searching for the products. They've kind of got all that. All you have to do is make sure that you're ranked, make sure you have a well-reviewed product, that people like your product and are giving you positive reviews. And over time, if things are going well, you're going to get quite a bit of sales through Amazon FBA. I know people have gotten started in that in the last couple of years. One guy in particular just recently sold his business, a friend of mine, for just under $1 million, and he started maybe 2 years ago, and he's done really well with it. One thing I'll say is a lot of people try to make Amazon FBA sound like this magical unicorn, like, everyone's making money, everyone's crushing it with Amazon FBA. There are some downsides. I'm sure we're going to talk about downsides later, but one of the downsides is it is a cash cow, cash vampire. To grow those FBA businesses, you're constantly, rebuying inventory. And if they're growing, and they typically can grow fast, which you want that to happen, you're going to be upside down for a long time. Most of the people I know that get into that are just, maxing credit card. They're getting lines. They're doing everything they can to keep their inventory in stock. And it can just really suck down your cash.
Wow. Well, it definitely there's different things going on here. And for me, what we bought kind of falls under just a general e-commerce, which was software, a mobile gaming kit software. So it kind of wasn't in some of the Amazon FBA or Amazon affiliate or AdSense, just a general website. And I know for me, one of the risks that I was looking at with this software was a couple of things. One, it gets sold in two different places, directly on the website, and two, through essentially an Amazon-type place called Unity Asset Store, where software developers go to buy stuff. So there are two kind of different traffic sources. And so, of course, some of the risk I was thinking about, well, what if they decide to delist the product or you change the... however they feature businesses or whatever. So that was one risk I was thinking of before buying the business, as well as the gentleman that had set up everything has this great sales page of selling the software, and he was just relying on organic traffic. So what if the organic traffic dies and goes away from SEO or whatever Google's algorithm changing and how people find the site? So that's something I was thinking about with those kinds of things that I got. What do you think about like the AdSense, Justin? What are some risks for the AdSense type business?
Well, first off, I should mention I'm going to mention the benefits first. Because a lot of people, you can compare an online business purchase to an offline business purchase, like kind of on the lower level. So let's say, for example, you're buying a laundromat, right? Or a convenience store or a liquor store or something like that for $80,000 versus a website, right? For $80,000. One of the benefits of a website or an online business is it can be run from absolutely anywhere. I mean, like I said, I'm in Saigon right now. I know people are running these businesses from beaches in Thailand or wherever. So you're not stuck geographically. If you're in a small town, you're not going to buy the business and be stuck running it. And that's often the case with like smaller gas stations or convenience stores, that kind of thing. You're buying it, but you end up kind of being the manager / cleaner / everything. Another benefit is that it's not likely, most of them at least, are not likely to go upside down or to get upside down on you, whereas like a physical business can, right? If you've got costs that are exceeding your revenue, you can actually be losing money every month, not just not making money, but losing money. And that's generally not the case for online business. It can be depending on paid traffic plays and stuff, but it's mostly not the case. So there are some serious advantages to online businesses over offline, but that doesn't mean they don't come with risk. And in fact, the risks are different, right? So some of the risks with an AdSense type business, one of them you already mentioned, a lot of times they're based on organic traffic, meaning people are searching certain keywords in Google and they're doing a Google search or Bing search. I don't know if anyone actually does that, but they're doing a search and they find your site, go to your site, kind of read a page or two and then click on the ad. Well, if Google changes their algorithm, they change anything and just don't like your site anymore. They say, oh, your site's not as good. We're going to put these other five ahead of you. you can lose quite a bit of search traffic. You can become penalized. You can take, you know, just small hits. You can decline over time. You can go up too, but, you know, you can go up to a limit. I mean, you can't be more than number one for your keyword. Now, you can get ranked for more keywords, which is what most people that build content-based, you know, organic traffic sites do, is they start to build out more content and get ranked for new keywords. But you can only be number one for the keyword. There's only one way to go from there, and that's down. So that's one risk. Another risk is that, you know, not only you're reliant on Google traffic, organic search traffic, you're also reliant on Google for your monetization. So if Google, for whatever reason, found a piece of your content objectionable or too risky, or, you know, one of the advertisers complained, or someone in your house went to the site and started clicking on the ads to get you paid, or someone in your neighborhood did that, you can run the risk of Google banning your AdSense account. And, you know, Google doesn't, you know, they're not going to devote a ton of resources to people that it thinks are trying to scam the platform or scam, you know, the AdSense program. They're gonna shut you down and not ask a lot of questions. And this has happened to people where they lost their AdSense account. It could be your primary way of earning money. And the problem with that is a lot of the other options aren't as good. Like media.net is an alternative, but it's not nearly as good. You're probably gonna have to switch the site around to a different monetization platform that's not AdSense, that's not advertising based, which means a fundamental change to the site. So there are, you know, two pretty clear risks with AdSense sites. There are others depending on what you're doing. FBA, I said, is cash heavy. There's other risks with an e-commerce business where, you know, you're shipping your products over from China by freight, right? It's on a ship and your container falls off the side in a storm, right? Unless you bought that insurance, you're screwed. You and, you know, if you had anyone else in that container, they're screwed too. And that's not uncommon. You can buy container insurance for the times where they hit those rough seas and containers go sliding overboard. So there are risks with all, I mean, there's all kinds of risks with online businesses. Some of them are shared with offline businesses, but some of them are really unique to kind of the online business world.
Well, I think that those are great overviews, Ben. That's just really good way to look at all this stuff. And I mean, no matter what you do, right? I mean, there's risk with it. You buy a house to live in, you could have floods or earthquakes or you name it, right? I mean, there's risk with everything. I think the reason why I bought a business really came down to I wanted to have another income stream coming in. What kind of people do you see buying online businesses through Empire Flippers? Are they experienced? Are they not experienced? Or just all over the map? What does that look like?
Yeah, so we did a podcast episode on it, and it really resonated with our audience. And it was the six types of website buyers. And so we basically made avatars or profiles of these people. And they kind of, you know, run the gamut. Like, you know, we called one of them Newbie Norms, right? Newbie Norms is a guy who is like heard about this kind of online business thing, probably listened to a podcast like this and has seen advertising sites, knows that some sites make money, but isn't really sure, wants to figure it out. Isn't 100% sure these sites actually make money and the whole thing isn't a scam. So they buy kind of a smaller site just to kind of try it out and get their feet wet. Don't have a lot of experience, probably need a little more hand-holding, want kind of a basic site, of AdSense or Amazon-type site. And then you have other people, like a do-it-yourself Dave, right, who does this, maybe he's done it a couple of times, but they're really looking for something that they can get their hands dirty in. Maybe they're really good with, like, you know, backlinks or kind of SEO traffic. They're looking for something they can really do some work from. Maybe it's on a beach in Bali, but they want to spend a few hours a day kind of doing some work and really tinkering with the business. And you got, you know, Strategic Sally, who is looking for a business that is a really good fit. Maybe she's got a main kind of business going and she sells, you know, dog collars. And, you know, she's in the pets category and wants to expand into cats. And there's a, you know, cat supply website that she wants to buy because she thinks there's some crossover between her customers. She buys this business making $5,000-$6,000 a month. She knows that she's already got a baked in audience that she can, you know, immediately double the earnings in the business just based on the current audience she has and offering the products, you know, cross promoting the product. So there's the portfolio Pauls that have a dozen or two dozen or five dozen, you know, 100 websites or online businesses already. They've got a team of people. Sometimes they have investors or they have like silent partners that are fronting some of the money. They're putting some of the money in themselves. Recently, as a portfolio, Paul, we've got a few of those guys that buy pretty regularly from us, maybe half a dozen times a year. They'll sell a few with us and buy a few with us. Recently, we've been seeing funds kind of get into the space. So you'll have a $1 million, $3 million, $10 million fund, and they've raised some money, and they put some money in themselves, and they're looking to kind of team up and buy interesting purchases that they can, 3X, 5X, 10X in the next few years. They're looking for kind of like the bigger wins. Normally with like acquisitions like that, it's a private equity investment banks, and they kind of don't go under 10 million. So there's this gap in the market right around, like 1 to 10 million, that private equity, it's too small to move the needle for like an investment bank or private equity. But it's too big for an individual investor. So, no one's sitting around with, $3.5 million in the bank. But if you pool some money together, you've got the money. So we're starting to see that in the market. But that's still kind of bleeding edge. That's still super new.
Well, in my opinion, as I was looking at some of the valuations and how you guys are pricing things, I mean, to me, relative to cash flows, of course, there's all these risks, but I thought things look overall pretty attractively priced. I'm guessing that overall that multiples have expanded a little bit since you started this thing, meaning that if you look at price to earnings or those kind of valuation metrics, price to revenue, whatever you want to look at, that price has gone up relative to some of those stats. I mean, what do you think about how businesses get valued? Has that been changing? What would you say about that?
Yeah, so we talk about a multiple, right? A multiple of net monthly profit or sales discretionary earnings, depending on where you're coming from. But we talk about a multiple. We talk about it monthly. So I'll tell you, before we got started brokering online businesses and with our marketplace. Before we got started at all, online businesses were selling around 12 to 15 times the net monthly profit. So it was making $1,000 a month. You could buy it for around $12,000 to $15,000, which today sounds just absolutely delicious, right? I mean, you hear that, you're like, wow, give me some of that.
Right.
That changed, when we started brokering sites and started selling sites on our marketplace, we were doing it at 20 times net monthly profits, so $1,000 sell for about $20,000, and that's because that's what we were selling it for. That's kind of like where we found the market. We could probably squeeze 22, 24 out, but it was around 20. And since then, that was 3-4 years ago. Since then, we've seen those multiples steadily increase. It's around 30 right now, so about 2.5 years, anywhere from like 2 to 3 years times profit, or 24 to 35x net monthly profit, and that's about where the multiples are. And it's gonna vary. 24 sounds a hell of a lot better than 36, right? The thing is, though, it's going to vary based on a lot of things. So how long the business has been around. If it's only been around for a year and a half, it's a little riskier from a buyer's perspective. They're going to pay a lower multiple. It's been around for 4 years, it's less risky. If the earnings are very seasonal or like fluctuate pretty highly between 1 month to the next, that can be a bit of a risk for a buyer. And a bunch of other things, just, like how many product lines does it have and what kind of review is it? How strong is the brand? Things like that will affect the multiple ultimately. But yeah, you're looking at somewhere between 25 and 35X right now with us.
Interesting. Well, as I was crunching the numbers on my acquisition and what we did, I thought it was just fascinating. As I looked at the way I always try and look at things is, what is the heck is the worst case scenario, right?
Yeah.
So I never go off of the numbers as presented. I go and look at it and I say, okay, like in this particular case, the business we bought had gross revenues of about 87K. So what I did is I went right down to what was the worst month that the business had. And that's how I valued it off of. So if we had the worst month for 2 years, what would that look like? And what I came up with was that we would have a rate of return of, including some earnout, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later, we'd still have an overall rate of return of about 20, 25% on our money.
Yep.
Which that's an active investment for certain, but still, that's a heck of a rate of return on your money, even using a worst case scenario that I had baked into it.
Are you assuming, though, the valuation would stay the same? Because if the earnings were at that lowest month, you wouldn't be able to sell that asset for the same value generally.
Right, right. I was just looking at it from a cash flow perspective. That, and then as soon as you take the earnout out of it, that we would be cash flowing even better and better. So obviously the valuation does go down if that happens. As a matter of fact, that's about where we're at. Was my worst case scenario is coming true, but it's still producing cash flow. So we just had our first distribution a few days ago of the profits after we banked some money for a few months to sock it away. So I'd love to know, what do you think, you know, as someone looks at these, and we all have to put in assumptions of some sort, what are good assumptions? Was what I did good, bad? How would you evaluate that kind of decision as someone thinks about having to put money into a business in the future?
Well, one of the things you mentioned, you know, the earnout, and I'm sure you'll talk a bit more about that, but you know, it always makes sense to get some sort of seller financing as a buyer. Not to necessarily get it, but it always makes sense to ask. Like, there's zero reason not to ask. You know, worst case, you're getting seller financing at a 0% interest rate, which isn't so horrible. But best case, you might be able to tie a large chunk of, you know, what you have to pay into the success of the business. And this is generally true, you know, if the seller, they'll at least do a portion of it, if they believe in the business and they believe in you. Keep that in mind too, that a seller may not be willing to do it, and it may not be because of what they think the business is going to do. It may be because they think you're not going to do all that well with it, which is probably a sign anyway for you, right? another thing is that, you know, so it's not, generally it's not of interest to sellers if they've got a better offer, an all cash offer. Let's say you're offering, you know, 50% upfront, 50% earnout over 12 months, and they've got a 90% cash upfront offer. They're most likely going to take the 90% cash offer. So it really depends on who you're competing with. Yes. And if you're under $200,000 purchase or acquisition, you're likely to be competing with at least a couple others, because there's a lot of people in that space looking to buy. If it's an $800,000 acquisition, you might not have as much competition. No guarantee that you won't, but you might not have as much competition as you would for a $100,000 deal, for example.
Well, and just to think about that, where we talked about, basically there's three different ways people can finance. Is you have a down payment, right? Money you put down to buy it, just like you do with a house. You got the earnout, which is one of the things I'm a big fan of, and then you got the seller financing. And what I generally found in this particular deal I had was we were the only offer on the table. And so we were able to negotiate to get that earnout. So of course I started out lower, right? Lower than what I hope for, and then you negotiate your way up. Do you think negotiating skills are super important in this kind of deal? Obviously, there's experience, some of those other factors, but you know, from a buyer's perspective, like how important is that? I guess it's dependent on the market, but
it's a lot more important if you're not working through a broker, right? Because if you're working through a broker like us, right, we're gonna massage, especially if you're new. And you know, buyers can be, well, I don't know if it's buyers being some way or sellers feeling some way, but sellers can feel very offended by offers, right? And so one of the things we do is we'll massage kind of the wording and the approach to an offer, whereas it isn't the case if you're buying an off-market deal, right? So you may bring it to seller and they're like, this is crazy. I put in my blood, sweat, and tears into this. You know what I mean? Right. So you might get a little more huff and puff if there's not someone kind of helping to negotiate. I mean, now it's not true when we're dealing with professionals like the portfolio Pauls I mentioned before that kind of do this day in and day out. Sure, they'll negotiate, sure, but like they're just kind of, it's just doing the business. You know what I mean? Like it's not, they don't get terribly emotional about it. But you know, a lot of times like newer buyers and often, you know, newer sellers can get emotional. So that's one of the things I think we can help calm that down and get the deal through, if that makes sense. And we help, you know, guide both the seller and the buyer in the deal. Now we represent the seller. Like we're representing their interest, trying to get the business sold for them. But, you know, we have a double-sided marketplace. So we have buyers that are customers as well. So ultimately we as brokers want to get the deal done. I'll give a bit of advice for people that probably haven't either dealt with a broker before, you know, for not a business broker, or haven't really thought it through, but you know, we're almost completely aligned with the seller's interest, except for the fact that we may not necessarily want to get you the best terms, right? I'm just being completely frank here, but like our job is to get the deal done, present buyers and get the deal done. And yep. So if you lose a little bit of cash or you have to pay a little bit more in an earnout, we want to get the deal done. So we're bringing you deals, trying to get you to get the deal done. So that's one of the ways that buyers can use that to their advantage, is kind of leverage the fact that brokers are just looking to get a deal, to actually get the broker fighting on their behalf with the seller. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. Well, I mean, I think the big thing is you got to be willing to walk away if you can't yes. make it work for you when you crunch the numbers. We had another podcast that will be available when this one comes out with Corey Fawcett, where he talks about that with real estate. And you got to put the pencil to the paper, as I did, to get an idea of what works. And I think to your point of, hey, under $200,000, you're less likely to be able to negotiate. I mean, if you think about that, where if you can swing a deal where, just to use a simple example of 50% down and a 50% earnout, if you had to buy a business for 100% cash at $100,000 versus a business where you were able to swing a 50-50 deal on a $200,000 business, I would say that personally for me, I like that idea of a $200,000 business where the seller is incentivized to see it work.
Yeah. Well, the other thing you can do too as a seller or as a buyer is they can share in the upside. So the earnout doesn't have to be capped. So if you do 50% up front, 50% based on an earnout, let's say on gross profit or net profit, or tied just a percentage of revenue or whatever, that can go up or down. So the seller has upside in it. As a buyer, you can cap the upside, but if you do that, you're probably gonna have to cap the downside too. There may be some minimum you pay out. So that's a little more complicated. You aren't gonna see that for like the smaller deals. It's a little more straightforward than that. But you can get super complicated with deal structures, and we sometimes do that just to get the deal done, to get everyone kind of like, cover their bases and kind of their wants and needs in the deal.
Great advice, man. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. All right, well, let's take pause here for a second and go to our commercial break. Well, if you are like some members of my audience, you are committed to being an amazing doctor and succeeding at life. But the truth is, you've never received financial training during medical school, and you struggle with enough time to do it all. And well, my friend, about a year ago, I started offering my book, The Freedom Formula for Physicians, for only $1 plus shipping. Well, this offer, it's coming to an end. And so only through the end of August, you can still pick up my book, The Freedom Formula for Physicians, for only $1. That's right, the whole copy, a physical copy to hold in your hands for only $1 plus shipping. And actually, that's only just part of this incredible deal, because I throw in a bonus electronic copy completely for free, so you can start reading it immediately. But there's a problem. This is coming to an end. So make sure you take me up on this offer. Are you ready to pick up this book and get the financial training that you've desired? You can visit the podcast website now at www.drfreedombook.com to pick up your copy. Or you can simply text Dr. Book to 44222. Don't let this podcast, my friend, be like other ones where you hear great information, you get some new ideas, but you never actually complete anything. To snag your copy now, visit www.drfreedombook.com or text Dr. Book to 44222. So now, doctors in particular, they are just super compressed for time, right? During the day, most of them, I mean, they're back to back to back seeing patients every 15 minutes. And that's for someone that's doing full time. I see a lot of physicians today that are doing 0.8 or 0.7 or something like that, where they have some breathing room. Have a hospitalist that I work with that he actually works for a couple days and has a bunch of days off. So I think depending upon the type of doctor, certain businesses might be better for others. So for someone that's really super compressed for time, how much time do you think minimally would be involved, like you talked about, the AdSense or the Amazon affiliate may not take as much time. Give us a sense of what that could be. What does that look like?
It's just so varied that I can't really, like, it's just too difficult. So, like, there are sites, you know, AdSense, Amazon type site, where you may not do anything at all for several months. And then you take a couple of weeks and you order some content, you put some content up, you make a couple of changes, and you work, you know, 20 hours a week for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and you don't do anything else for another 6 months. So, I mean, that's, you know, kind of like some of the AdSense and Amazon sites can be pretty minimal, but there is some amount of maintenance. So I don't want anyone thinking that they're going to be able to buy, someone with zero experience has never, no idea what AdSense is or Amazon Associates is right now, and they can go out and just buy a business and have this thing that just prints money every month. Like, just not the case. Like, you have to have some skill set. So, you know, for your listeners, I mean, one of the things, let's say they have zero time, they have a bit of cash, right? But they have, like, just zero time and don't really have the inclination to learn about it. One of the things they can do is pool up together with other doctors. You know, they can, you know, form mini investment groups. And let's say there's one person on there that does have some skill sets. Maybe they run a podcast for fun, or, you know, they have, you know, some online blog that they run, or they've monetized a site or two. And they're the ones that kind of take the reins, get a you know, larger equity stake, put in some cash as well, along with the more passive investors, and they can kind of team up and do a deal. But for anyone that's like, just like, you know, they're, they have no idea, they've never done this before, and they want to go out and buy a website, it does, I don't recommend that. You're going to have to get your feet wet. And there's a lot of people out there that talk about how to, you know, build a site that makes money, you know, guys like nichepursuits.com and Cloud Living and cloudliving.com. There's a bunch of them out there that are legit and show you how to build these websites. But you have to learn the basics before you're going to be able to run one of these sites. And, you know, to get back to your question, I mean, it can be just a, you know, maybe a couple hours a month up to a full-time job. And some of these businesses have staff, they have teams, definitely contractors. So that's going to be a much more involved business than kind of a more passive affiliate site. But I don't want anyone to think that it's a completely passive investment. These just aren't.
I think that's absolutely fair. And I think I encourage anyone, if you're interested in pursuing wealth and you want to get outside of clinical medicine, get your hands dirty. Get your fingers in the ground with this stuff and understand how it works. And I think listening to the Empire Flippers podcast or other ones like it is a great way just to get a handle on it first. And maybe you just start a blog or something like that. So even if you don't do a whole lot with it, if you're truly interested in this space. But I will tell you from my experience, Justin, and I'd love to hear your reaction to this. I think once you kind of know how things work, whether it's Facebook advertising or whether it's blogging or whether it's the Amazon stuff, I think hiring people around you, right, can save you that time. So
Yes. And
it depends on the business you buy. So the business that we bought, my relative, he is a computer programmer. And so he knew all the tech stuff for this business, because I don't code stuff. I know a little bit of HTML, but if you started asking me, you know, for how do you know the HTML code for bolding, I have no clue.
You
know, I just click on the thing and do it, right? I can copy and paste. It's not that hard, but
that
still,
like,
I don't. Yeah. Right. I don't know the coding stuff. And so that was a weakness for me as we're buying a software gaming business. But I knew from doing the podcast, from some of my other ventures, that I knew about blogging, I knew about social media, I knew about some of that stuff, which my relative has absolutely no idea about that stuff. So
yeah,
it was a really good compliment for the two of us to work together on this particular one. And so what was nice is when we bought this thing, that he has his full-time job, I have my full-time job, and there were people that were in place. One guy does some of the customer service support, and he's in India. Mm-hmm. Another guy does some of the coding, and he's in Eastern Europe. And then there's other subcontractors that help create graphics. One guy in Portugal, and another guy in Ukraine or Russia or someplace like that, that help with it. So there's this team around the business already, which really helped us to be able to plug in so we don't have to do everything ourselves.
Yeah, that makes sense. A lot of them, especially, you know, like 100, 200, 300,000, like, it doesn't make enough to where you're going to have like full-time staff, but a lot of them will have, you know, kind of like part-time contractors, and people are like, well, you know, do the people come with the business? No, we're not slave trading here. Like, it's you know, they may come if they want, like, you know, they could choose to if they're interested. If they like what you're doing, maybe they'll come along. But so it's, you know, it's and I don't know why I had a, and this is a silly side point, I was on Reddit the other day. We did like an IAMA. I don't know if you're familiar with Reddit, but there's a subreddit there that's super popular for, you know, basically ask you anything. And there were people asking questions, and they were wondering. They said, so, you know, when you sell an online business, do the employees get paid too? Do they get paid? No, they don't make any benefit from the business. I mean, unless you have some kind of profit share with them, why would they? But a lot of times the part-time contractors will come along. They like the job. Maybe they, you know, work a couple hours a week and they're happy to do it. You just, you know, need to, you know, have a conversation with them, and they're normally on board. Was there any struggle with the people that you had here bringing them on with you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the guy that does some of the customer service stuff in India, again, this is not a full-time thing, as you said. You know, this is, I think it's like 10 hours a month. So it's not a whole lot of time he's putting into it, but it does help. So we don't have to directly answer some of the customer emails and inquiries into the product. He's been great. That's been super easy. The guy that does some of the development, he's a character. Let me put it that way. You know, I think he has a pretty high opinion of himself, and so.
Oh well, that's not uncommon with developers. Let's just let's put that up. Yeah, no, developers and designers, man, they are the prima donnas of the business world for sure.
Yeah, so this dude is totally a prima donna, and sounds like he's had some health issues, and so it's we've been looking at other developers that can work on deadlines and give an estimate of how long it takes a project to be done. You know, just simple stuff like that.
I don't, Joe and I, you know, we've done pretty good. I mean, we're good marketers, right? I think we're good entrepreneurs, make good decisions. You talk about hiring, you can hire people. Hiring is a skill in and of itself, but, you know, we've gotten pretty good at hiring. We built systems and we can train, I think, pretty well. We manage pretty well. But every time, I'm patting myself on the back for that. Every time we get into a development project, we lose. We don't work well with developers. We don't hire them well. We don't give them good direction. I mean, it's all our fault, don't get me, because we work with enough developers to know it's not them, it's us. But we just suck at it. So I'm telling you, if you've got a win, you said it's a family member or a cousin or a friend or something. Yep. Like if you got a win there and you guys can work together and you're good at marketing or like grabbing attention, you know, hang on to that. Ride that puppy for all it's worth, because that's very difficult for me.
Oh man. Yeah, no, it's a journey. And I guess my point being to everyone, you know, as you get your hands dirty and figure out how things work, you can outsource this stuff. So it might take some initial time on your side, but I would encourage most of us to look at a larger deal where we can have more revenue coming in the door. Yep. Because, you know, I think if you buy a $50,000 business, well, it doesn't sound like a whole lot of money relative to a $200,000 business, but I actually think that you could be screwing yourself over, because if you do an all cash deal and then things kind of fall apart, there wasn't a whole lot of revenue there to begin with. So
yeah, the bigger businesses have more to play with, right? You've got you got optionality, because there's enough money to where you could hire. You just got more options with a larger business. I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's when you can outsource stuff easier. I mean, you have more resources to work with. So I would encourage physicians to think about that. And as Justin said, look for that family member, look for that other person or two that can complement your skill sets. Because for me, that's been a godsend that has just so helped us out. All right, man. Well, let's keep going here. Got about 10 more minutes to go. And there's so much more I'd love to cover, but maybe we'll have to do it a different time. So here's the deal, right? So we go and buy this business. Gross revenue of last year was 87 grand. So nice size business. And there's the stuff that's direct on the website, which altogether, that was about like 33 grand out of the 87. And then there was this Unity asset store and some of these other places, which added up to about another like 45 grand, 46 grand of that number, plus some others here and there that were some custom gigs. Yep. So all in all, the vast majority of revenue wasn't coming from the website. It was coming from other places. And so just to walk through some of these numbers, which I'm sure we'll be going over in the podcast on a separate thing. So we took this thing over at the very beginning of March. So if you divide that 87K by 12, right, you get about 7,000 a month and change, right? Yep. So month one, we had about 3,600, right, of rev. There are some issues with PayPal of trying to get things going, so I just kind of brushed it off. It was like, okay, that's just the first month, you know, let's just see how things go. Month two, we had about 5,200. So that was starting to look better, which that was kind of more like my projection of kind of the worst possible month. And now we're talking in May here, middle of May, we have about $2,000. So hopefully this month can look like last. But unfortunately, you know, it is a lot lower than was projected. And you and I were talking before we got started on the podcast that what's been really frustrating for me is that Unity Asset Store, the direct website has been good relative to the past, but it's that Unity Asset Store that's just killing me. So I would love to know your thoughts on if you were me, not knowing the business in and out, but just knowing good general business principles, what would you be thinking of as ways to increase this business and how I should be thinking about it?
Well, you know, one of the things I want to know is like kind of what are your skill sets and what do you think you could do well with it? And we talked before the show a little bit about potentially doing some paid traffic. And I don't know if it was Facebook or AdWords, but you tried that out. You think you might be onto something there. Exploring, I think, skill. I don't know if that's a particular skill set of yours, but it's definitely something you're interested in. I would try to apply new traffic strategies. I don't know exactly. I don't know much about Unity or the deal there. So like it was selling on that platform and sales dropped off. Is that right?
Yep, exactly.
So it's like selling on Amazon, for example, and you know, people just stop buying on Unity.
Pretty much.
Do you have a rep there? Did you call and ask them? Because they generally want you to sell well too. I'm guessing they get a piece of the deal.
They do, yeah. They get about 30% of every deal. So I had emailed a couple people there. And you know, I just kind of got handoff to another person.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of just stopped. So that was a month ago. So
did you get bad reviews? I mean, what is your kind of like page there? What is your review situation on the platform?
The reviews actually are pretty good, but there haven't been a lot lately. So that might be something we could think about trying to get more reviews.
Can you advertise on the platform? Do they allow for you to advertise there?
That was one of my inquiries.
Buy your way into rankings, effectively?
Yeah, that was one of the inquiries I had. And from what I could see, they don't have any ads, and they didn't respond back to my question about ads. So,
all right. Well, leaving that aside, because, I mean, that sounds like that's where I'd look first, right? Because that's just the kind of, I mean, revenue's down there significantly. How can I get that back on track to at least, you know, reasonably close to what it was before? That's my first question and probably the easiest way to get back on track. Kind of a bigger question. I'm looking at the site right now, and I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give it away, but like it's starting to feel a little dated. Like I'm a customer of one of the things that it's kind of talking about here. It's an embarrassing one of those like guilty pleasures, I'd have to say. So it's guilty pleasure of mine. One of the things that's being talked about here, and I know that their numbers are declining pretty heavily. Right. Mm. So I don't know if you know that, but they've got kind of new things that are out and maybe like kind of freshening it up and talking about some of the ones that are kind of like on the way up rather than on the way out would be helpful. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Would you just like to look through Google Play to like look at those kind of things?
Yeah, or the same company that originally had the kind of big win there, look at what other kind of things they got going on. And I mean, you could just Google them and find out like they have other things that are going on right now that are popular, and then maybe do some imagery and marketing around that, particularly targeting keywords for that and that kind of thing. And definitely Facebook would help you there, as you probably know.
Yeah, totally. Well, That's something I have to look more into. I was kind of thinking that myself. We're talking about Clash of Clans is similar to the kind of thing that we have on here. So, no, those are good suggestions, man. I think just more reviews, just rechecking into advertising on their platform. They have sales that they have, so you can fill out a form. But I feel like it's kind of like putting in your resume. You know, you get hit with 1,000 resumes. I need to figure out who the people are who make decisions to get in front of them.
They've got companies that do that, kind of like Legion. I don't know if they do it on a one-off. I mean, but basically, yeah, do a little Google foo and see if you can get a hold of someone over there that might be able to help you out. But I mean, that would be, that's where I would look. I mean, I don't know how big they are, but you know, they might have just a ton of people. It's like trying to reach someone at Amazon. Like, good luck with that, right? They're not someone that make a decision at Amazon. not gonna be fun, right? But I don't think they're that big, clearly. So you got to be able to get a hold of someone. Hitting them up on Twitter, once you find them, hitting them up on Twitter is generally effective. Someone starts pinging you on Twitter, you're like, oh God, all right, I got to get back to this person. So that should probably help you. You can find at least one of the founders or definitely one of the top people over there and hit them up. That may help get you in touch. So yeah, I mean, that would be, I think, the best way to do it. I think freshening up the business overall, definitely the paid Facebook stuff has the potential for a win. So yeah, I mean, those are probably the directions I'd head. This sounds super scary of a business to run because of kind of the tech aspect. It sounds like you've got that covered and your partner in this is interested. So that's good, but this would scare the hell out of me if I was looking to buy.
Well, I think that's why we were maybe able to swing the earnout and stuff like we did.
I think you're right. I don't remember this 100%, but I think you're right that it was a tougher sell because the developer kind of piece. Yeah.
So I'd love to know from you, Justin, as we start to wrap up here. So this is something that even though it hasn't turned out exactly as I want, I mean, still it's producing a nice income for the family. And as a matter of fact, I didn't have to put down a whole lot down. Actually, I just financed the whole thing through 0% interest rate credit cards and bank stuff, although we just paid down the credit line in order to just have the cash flow pay us some money. So I'd love to know from your perspective. My wife is someone that she's interested in this stuff. She's gotten into YouTube. She has a band called Seed. So she's getting into our Infusionsoft account and getting used to email correspondence. So she's still a newbie. You know, she's the newbie Normette, if you will. just kind of getting going. And and so she's looking at what I'm doing and she's like, oh, I want to invest into something I want to do too, right? Yeah. And she wants to get in on the action. And for me, I'm just kind of concerned about her time because we have two kids. She has the band kind of thing going on.
I think running an online, to be honest with you, I think running an online business when you have the kids is fantastic. It's way better than a work from home job where you generally might have set hours. I mean, the real benefit, mostly one of the benefits of an online business is you have to work on it and you can't just go weeks without doing it, almost any of them, right? Or months without doing it for the most part. But you can work on the hours that make the most sense. So your kids are taking a nap or they're out for whatever and you got a couple hours, you can knock a little bit of work out. I think that's one of the real benefits.
Absolutely. Well, what do you think, like knowing she's newer, would be just generally, do you think more like an Amazon affiliate kind of business or like what kind of type would you suggest for someone like her that's newer, has a little bit of education, but she's never gotten into WordPress or anything like I have, you know, in terms of building
her
site.
Is she listening?
What's that?
Is she here on the line or is she going to be listening to this afterwards?
Be very quiet. She's my family. No, she's not here at all. I'm at my office. She's at home. We're good.
Gotcha. All right. So, I mean, it depends on kind of like if she's more of a developer rather than a marketer, I'd look for something, maybe partner with a marketer like you or whatever. But honestly, Amazon Associates sites, I think, are a pretty good buy right now. Let me explain why. So the Amazon Associates program just took a big hit. So earlier this year, they decreased the percentage that you get for sending the traffic and ultimately the customers to Amazon. So not all of them, I think some of them actually went up, but across the board, there was a hit for the most part, maybe 20-30% on average.
Wow.
So that was a pretty big shakeup. And I don't think it's likely to happen again. They might have even went a little too far. So I think that, and so all the sites have taken that hit right now. And I don't think they're likely to do it again in the near future. If anything, it might get slightly better. So I think you might be buying at like a lower earning period for an Amazon associate site. So there's a benefit there. It's also relatively easy. I mean, you know, mostly Amazon sites are review sites. So you're buying products, you know, you're just talking about them, this one versus that, right? Like a competitive type pieces of content where you rate one versus the other. If you look, and you've done this, I've done this a gazillion times, looked at Amazon associate sites, and most of them suck, right? They're just really bad, like written with kind of bad content and just not very good. So like, why don't you go a little above and beyond, like target like maybe higher priced products or like a luxury, like the luxury products, but actually buy them and actually review them. You know, you said your wife likes your YouTube channel, have her review them on YouTube. Right. And, you know, you can get just a little bit of production quality for not that much money. You can do some Facebook video, which is crushing it in terms of driving traffic right now and leads for friends of mine. They're killing me for us not doing more video and putting on Facebook. In fact, a buddy of mine just put some examples of videos he did on YouTube. You know, he got like, you know, 4,000 downloads. And on Facebook, the same video was getting like 80,000 downloads or something crazy.
Wow.
Jeez. So like Facebook video is crushing it right now. Native, not don't put YouTube links, just put the video on Facebook. But she could do reviews of like higher priced premium products. And I think crush some of the Amazon associate sites are out there that just try to do it on the cheap with like, you know, stock images or like Amazon images. I mean, you can get like a real photographer, or if you have a knack for that, actually do some of the photography yourself and do really well. And I think there's real value in that. We did... you know, we had a bunch of customers and we reached out to them and said, look, if we sent, I know this is a crazy request, but we sent like a film crew to your work or to your house or whatever, would you do a review for us? And they were like, yeah, sure. So we actually sent, you know, videographers with scripts and everything. Well, not script, like written scripts they had to read, but like kind of like the plan, like, okay, here's what we're going to do. And then we're going to film you walking into the house and blah, 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 narrative. And then, like, you know, filmed them doing the whole thing, spent like a half day with them. And it was expensive for us. It wasn't cheap. But, like, we got these really cool quality videos out of it that, like, our competitors don't have. And it's a real way to stand apart. And I think particularly with, you know, just all the kind of crappy Amazon associate sites out there, if you're especially if you're targeting a premium brand, you know, making Amazon associate sites that stand apart, it can be a huge win.
Well, I think... to your point there, the nice thing about doing something premium, you have a higher price, right? So it doesn't take as many sales to make a decent amount of money, right? Versus
yeah, and Amazon books. That's new. So Amazon just changed it. It used to be based on volume. So if you sold a certain volume, you get over a certain percentage. And now it's like category-based percentages. So look for, you know, a higher paying category, maybe not the highest, but a higher paying category that has premium or luxury brands. Actually buy those brands, do some high quality, high touch reviews. And I think that'd be interesting. I mean, you could even do one of the, and you know this as a podcaster, but it's really valuable to be in someone's earbuds when they're at the gym or they're commuting or whatever, that they get to know your voice, they get to know you. So if she could even do that, like take her videos and then turn those into podcasts, slap a bumper on either end, turn those into podcasts and produce some high quality podcast content for an Amazon associate site. I sound like a crazy person, you know, building this like brand around, you know, the associates program. But I, especially for premium luxury goods, I think there's a real win there.
Interesting. Well, Justin, hey, I just want to say, man, I appreciate your time. I appreciate your mentorship and just giving us time out of your super busy, compressed schedule and having fun, hopefully, in Vietnam. So thank you, man, for taking out to do that. And there's so much that we just don't have time to cover today. Do you have just some closing thoughts that you want to make folks aware of?
Yeah, I do a podcast other than the Empire Builders podcast that I do with my business partner. We talk about like travel and we talk about running a business and hiring and just kind of like entrepreneurship and travel overall. But we did, I have a show with a guy called Ace Chapman. He's kind of like he's a buy side broker kind of. He partners with people, does some business, and we've done a lot of deals with him. And we run a show, a podcast called The Web Equity Show. And season two, we did, it's 10 episodes, season one, or episode one through 10, and we did it all about like buying a business from start to finish. So if you're brand new to buying, listen to episode one through 10, and we really get into the details. We're actually in season three right now, where episode one through 10, we take you through the process of selling. So whether you're buying or selling, if you want to hear just kind of the nuts and bolts of the business and really kind of start off with like definitions and get all the way into like how to structure and negotiate deals, like I'd really recommend the Web Equity Show. We put, you know, I'm really proud. I guess I'm just really proud of it. We're really proud of that content, and I think it's really helpful. So I'd recommend people looking to get started, check that out.
Well, and I think too, I mean, just the Empire Flippers podcast, you have, what, 150 episodes or something like that? You got a ton, right?
Yeah, something like that. We've been going at it a while. We're flaky, though, recently, man. We need to get back on the horse.
Well, Justin, thank you so much for being with us, buddy. If people have more questions, how can they follow up with you or find you outside of the Web Equity Show and the Empire Flippers podcast?
I tweet every now and again. They can check me out at Empire Flippers and send me a message and say what's up.
All right, man. Anything else?
No, that's it, Dave. Thanks so much, man. I like your show. I'm wishing you well. You've been at it for a little while, so you've got some experience. But you got a good show and a really good niche, a really interesting niche, man.
Thank you, buddy. Well, that wraps it up for today, my friends. In the next podcast, I would love to tell your story. So connect with me, and let's just help tons of physicians. Make sure to contact me, Dave, at drfreedompodcast.com or on my website, www.drfreedompodcast.com. Also, if you gain some value out of this podcast, my friend, and you are just loving this stuff, here's what I want you to do. I want you to grab your friend or your colleagues, their iPhone, their iPad, their Android device, whatever they got. I want you to find the podcast link on their device, get them subscribed to this podcast, and download your favorite episodes. And then tell them, hey, if they're ticked at you, they're going to thank you later, and you can just blame it all on me if they don't. So anyhow, thank you so much for joining me. It means so much to have you take time out of your busy, out of your compressed schedule. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Denniston. And remember, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle.